We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Howdy, hour number two. Comedy Alive for the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to help provide a seamless mortgage experience on this Tuesday. Around the country, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM, Channel 206. My man Teak is off today, so I'm going to hold it down solo out here in Utah. We're going to get to the Lions. We'll preview them. We'll preview the Raiders as well. We'll do Antonio Brown here on Twitter. You want to jump in at Tiki and Tierney, at Brandon Tierney, 1-855-212-4227. This Antonio Brown stuff. I mean, he is just, this is going to be, you know, Raider fans, be prepared for just holy hell with this guy. It's going to be sloppy. You know, I mean, here's what I don't understand. No, Mike, have you, or Deez, I don't think you guys have ever tried it. I don't know if Tiki asked you this. I don't even know if Tiki has tried it. Have either one of you tried cryotherapy? I don't think so, right?
I have not.
Okay. Deez?
I have not, and now I'm scared to.
Yeah, no kidding, right? I hear you. I tried it. I think I said this last time I was on in Utah with Teak. I tried it a couple of times for my back, and the rules are pretty explicit. You know, so first of all, without regurgitating, this is going to lead me to the helmet stuff, but just to paint a picture of AB, just as a Raider, forget about what happened with the Steelers, that's over. Cryotherapy is pretty basic. You go into, it's like almost like a half a shower where your head protrudes out. Right about up to neckish, right around there. And they give you a robe. They give you something for your hands. They give you these special socks for your feet. You go in 2 minutes. It's freezing. You get out. You feel better. That's basically that. That's the short version. You can't get hurt. You can't get injured unless you blatantly disregard the warnings or you have one of your own and you don't know really how to use it. But that's not the case because this happened in France. So obviously it was being, he was being instructed. It's, you know, if this was, I would almost feel, but I would give him a little more of a grace period if this happened at his mansion. Like, you know what? He's so invested. You know, Michael Jackson had this, not Michael Jackson, I'm sorry. Well, Michael Jackson did actually, but T.O. had this, like the chamber where you sleep in it and, you know, it just increases the oxygen that flows throughout the body, which promotes healing. There's certain things. You have money, you can obviously do things. If this was at Antonio Brown's mansion and he was so possessed with being the best football player that he can be, I'd say, you know what? Maybe hit the wrong button. That's human error. That can happen to anybody. All right. Just, you know, get those nasty feet fixed and start doing what you do. Right. But just blatantly disregarding the rules because it happened in France. All right. So that's number one. Then you get to this stupid helmet flap, which to me is almost inconceivable how somebody, use the word blatantly again, could blatantly be willing to disregard every ounce of medical data that we have been hit over the head with now, thankfully, for a better part of a decade or so, and disregard it just because you're uncomfortable. Now, I do want to be a little fair to him. When it's your trade, right, and your game is based on shiftiness and speed, but also directly to the helmet, you know, turning and starting and stopping and, you know, really readjusting, looking up, looking down, quick, you hit, you stop, boom, you turn. I mean, if that helmet does, like, I'll tell you what, I hate these headphones that I'm using. I can't stand them. But to do the show, and it's nobody's fault, I'm not calling anybody out, this isn't what I like. I like to have these off, and I like to have my little earbuds in. I think I'm Martian with this thing. Plus, this rope is hanging over, this wire's over my shoulder. I don't feel comfortable. You got to plow through it. You got to do what you got to do. You got to be a pro. And so I understand that it's a little uncomfortable that for somebody who is paid an inordinate amount of money to catch the football, when you got a 6'1" quarterback who runs a 4.39 or a 4.41 who's shadowing you, and I don't know, you're playing in Denver and the shadows are beginning to descend upon the stadium, and when you hit your 11th step, Derek Carr's back foot hits the turf, and it's a timing mechanism, and you turn and wham, this thing swings, okay, I could see why it could be a little detrimental to your craft. All right? But there's a simple solution here. I'm going to take it to the NHL. This is pre-Bettman, obviously. The NHL in 1979 implemented their version of the helmet rule. And there was some small print in there that amounted to large print for some, Craig McTavish most notably. If you signed a professional contract before whatever the – it was definitely 1979. I think it was April 1st, 79, but it was definitely 1979. If you signed your contract before the stipulated date, then you would be grandfathered in. And if you were dumb enough to want to play and take the risk and not wear a helmet because it impeded your ability to play hockey or whatever, your vision, etc., sign a little waiver and go out there without a helmet. You know, let the hair flow. Do what you got to do. And that's why Craig McTavish, this is even after the Rangers won the Cup in 94, I think he finished with the Blues in 96, I want to say. You don't have to double check. I think it was 96 with St. Louis Blues. He was the last NHL player to play without a helmet, and he was willing to take that risk personally, medically, but he also signed a waiver, which was, you know, creating distance. God forbid if there is a head trauma, if there's something that happens on the ice, he's acknowledging, just like you go on a roller coaster, blah, blah, blah. I'll give you another example. Jen was out here this past weekend, and, oh, my God, you know, Mike DeSalle, I'm officially terrified of heights, dude. Remember I told you the story about when I got to the top of Wasatch Mountain, 11,000 feet? I froze. I couldn't move. I literally pulled my car into the middle of this little road. It wasn't even really a road. I couldn't move. I was frozen with fear. I was going to call. I didn't know who to call, the ranger, the cop. It was terrifying. I was sweating. I was praying. It was awful. Happened to me again. Jen and I went to for dinner in Park City, and they have the ski ramps. Obviously, a great place, the most renowned place in our country, actually, to ski, even more so than Aspen. And we just took this little leisurely, you know, whatever it's the ski slope, ski ramp thing. Had a drink. I'm like, oh, this will be, it's like 45 minutes, go around, take in the mountains. As soon as this thing lifted off, I started getting nervous. So I'm officially afraid of heights. But the point being, I had to sign a waiver, right, as did my wife. God forbid, if anything happens, we absolve you of any blame. So just sign something. What's so hard about this? That's the first thing. The second thing, and the greater issue here with the Raiders, is that where is the self-awareness? Now, I know he's conceding, and he's going to live by the arbiter's ruling, and he's showing up today. He's going to be at Raiders camp. What a coincidence. Just in time for Hard Knocks. Antonio Brown era in Oakland is going to be a flat-out disaster. It's going to be a disaster. I'm not saying there won't be a few highlight grabs, and, yeah, he'll make a few plays in year one, whatever, but you can take this to the bank. It is going to unravel fast. I don't care what Derek Carr tweets. I don't care what he says. I don't care what John Gruden says, because he's not tweeting. Whatever he says on Hard Knocks or to reporters or whatever, off the record, he's not going to tolerate this nonsense very long. And, you know, there's just too many already. We are 3 weeks, even though we, you know, got traded a long time ago, but in terms of actually starting football stuff, 3 weeks into the Antonio Brown era in Oakland, and look at all this noise. Look at all this noise. What happens when they're 2-5? Or they're 3-4, or they're 2-6. I got a question for you. Anybody think the Raiders are going to be really good this year? Raise your hands. I didn't think so. Now, maybe if they were in a different division, I'd say they've got a chance to make a little noise. Kansas City's better. Chargers better. Broncos better. I mean, right now on paper, they're the fourth best team in the AFC West. And Antonio Brown was a headache when he was winning with the Steelers. So just dig in, Raider fans. I know you're desperate. I know that you're straddling this interesting line of emotions, very delicate balance of trying to, first of all, being full of enthusiasm for the return of Gruden. I get it. If I was a Raider fan, I'd be pumped. That would pump me up as well. Although doing what I do for a living and not being a Raider fan, I was not as high on the return of John Gruden to the NFL as some. I'm not sure if he's as adaptable as he needs to be. We'll find out. Maybe I'm wrong. No need to just dig in now and overly judge. But that was my initial assertion, and I'll stand by that. But big picture, you know, you have a quarterback. We don't know if he's the guy. We have a fan base that is, you know, stuck on an escalator. You're going up to start the season, but eventually you know it's going down because you know you're losing your team. This is just a very interesting blend of everything for the Raiders. You know, like, just ripping through the roster and deleting the dead bodies, the dead weight that don't fit what Gruden's trying to do. And he's already done that a little bit, but there's still more to go, no question. You know, deciding on key positions. I mean, I don't know that their offensive line is anything special. I don't know that their secondaries. I think their secondary is actually pretty bad. So I say all this for a guy you would think would come in. Oh man, my bad. Just sheer stupidity. I wasn't paying attention, or I was a little reckless. Whatever. My bad. I messed up with this cryotherapy stuff. I'm going to get in. Forget about the helmet. You know what? This is the rule. I'm not even going to waste any time. Forget about the arbiter. Let's go. Brady's doing it. A few other moving on. Let me just roll with the punches. Nope. You got to make a big stinker. Threaten to retire. And of course, he's not. But I just think that of all the subplots to the 2019 season, and there's so many good ones, so many riveting ones, then there's a few that straddle the line of polarizing but are also possibly combustible. This one is up here in terms of that category. Incredibly polarizing because he's a hell of a player. He's a hell of a talent. And he's an electric personality. But combustible because we see what he does in situations that don't cater to his every need. And again, that's from a winning franchise. That's from a franchise that probably keeps the nonsense out of our or off of our radar as much as anybody can possibly humanly do in the social media era, you know? And still, think about how much bled out from the Steelers locker room, you know? So, Mike Diesel, you guys have been doing this every day with Teak. Do you agree with my take that they're definitely the fourth best team in the division? Do you agree with that?
It's so beyond a question that, yes, I agree. Like, I mean, maybe the Broncos and them, depending on Flacco, but the Chiefs are way better. The Chargers are way better. Maybe they can be on par with the Broncos, but probably not because the Broncos' defense is still great. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, at least the fourth best, and the difference between them and the top two teams, it's not even comparable.
Yeah, you know, and I don't want to, you know, be overly bleak here. And, you know, certainly it's, you know, the middle of August. I'm going to give everybody a chance to start their season because, as we know in the NFL, it's just wildly unpredictable. And you could take five things that you firmly believe in right now with all your football conviction. Jot them down. Go back in 5 or 6 months. Guarantee at least two will make no sense. You'll look back and say, how the hell was I thinking that? How was I expecting that? What? We all do it, right? And conversely, you could write down five things that you never in your wildest imagination, whether it's an individual or a team achievement, would anticipate happening. 5 or 6 months later, go back in the draw. Wow, that's crazy. That's the NFL. You don't get that in the NBA. You get that in the NFL. So I'm not here to bury anybody in terms of what they could achieve as a team in August here. But if you're at least in my mind, definitely at the best, the third best team in the division. And, Mike, I'm with you. I don't love Denver, but I still think they're better than the Raiders. But you want to put them side by side, third best team in the division, possibly fourth. But then you got to look at the conference. And, you know, the AFC South has a few teams that are going to be in the mix for that wild card. The AFC North, I mean, the Browns. The Browns are going to win games. A lot of people think the Jets can make a little noise this year. I think the Jets will be competitive. You know, 8 wins, things go right, maybe 9. I think they'll be playing some meaningful games in December. I think the Bills will be pretty good. That defense is nasty. And I think the Bills will be, you know, entering Thanksgiving be they'll still be relevant. So if you look at everything in the AFC right now and you want to just be objective and say, okay, even though a lot of this will go in the incinerator 5 or 6 months from now, right now I look at the Raiders as, like, if John Gruden wasn't there and this noise from AB wasn't interesting, I wouldn't really give them much of a second thought. I really wouldn't, just based on their roster construction. All right, coming up next, we'll get back to the NFL. We've got to get to Andrew Luck's situation. Oh, God. I mean, is it muscular? Is it skeletal? What in the world is going on with Andrew Luck? We'll get to it. But coming up next, Mark Rolfing from the Golf Channel. We all play, right, varying degrees of success. I'm a hack, you know that. But I play quickly, at least. I'm not going to take 20 practice swings because I know it's probably not going to be a great shot anyway. Go to the ball, see it, get your grip, whack it, move on to the next shot. The Pro Tour right now, they are facing something that could cripple viewership and participation, and they better resolve it quickly, and that's pace of play. We'll get to that. Also, how's Tiger physically? We'll come up. We'll do a little golf coming up here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way to save money, which to Geico. Just go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on car insurance. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM, Channel 206 on Twitter at Tiki and Tierney. Good stuff with the DAC, with the Antonio Brown responses. Keep them coming in. We're checking them out. We'll respond to them. We'll get back to football. Andrew Luck, we'll discuss that situation. That seemingly has taken a different turn. Is it skeletal or is it muscular? According to, depending upon who you ask, it really varies. But Andrew Luck, get healthy, man. You got to get right. All right, let's do a little golf here. NBC Sports golf analyst Mark Rolfing. He's on site. He's in Chicago getting ready for the BMW Championship. NBC has it. And he is with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. A couple of things to hammer through. Mark, what's happening, buddy? How are you?
I am really good, and I think golf fans around America are going to be happy. You know, I just spent some time with Tiger in the clubhouse. He is on the property. He looks really good. He's feeling good. And great to have him here. There was a lot of question mark as to whether he was actually going to play or not, but the answer is he is.
Okay, that's good news. A lot of questions around Tiger, no doubt. When you pull out of a pro-am and all you do is chip and putt for the back nine and then have to withdraw after a ghastly, whatever it was, 75, 76, after what happened at the Open Championship over at Royal Portrush, the concerns were legitimate. And the quote that I saw, Mark, I thought I'd give it a go, end quote. Now, I'm certainly going to take your word for it, but that doesn't seem to be a real ringing endorsement of his health. I mean, I feel like you drew an overly rosy picture of Tiger Woods.
Yeah, you know, I think this is what we're going to see from Tiger in the future. I think it's going to be hit or miss. I don't think he's going to have long stretches where he really feels good a lot. It was clear to me at Portrush for the Open that he wasn't ready there. I think, you know, his situation is going to be, you know, very situational. How about that for a statement? I think we all got a little bit overzealous after he won the Masters, and pretty soon people were talking about, oh, he's going to break Jack Nicklaus's record again and everything else. I hope we all just kind of can enjoy what he accomplished there at Augusta. It's always going to be easier for at Augusta because he can play that place in his sleep. He knows it like the back of his hand, and he doesn't have to work hard to learn a golf course. And he is just not going to be able to practice that much and play as much in the future as he has been in the past.
Yeah, and Mark, that's the key part right there. I think everybody's wrapped up, and understandably so, when you have fusion surgery, which is incredibly invasive, and you're a golfer and it's your back, your health is going to be micro-analyzed on every level. But I think what's probably more important, or at least as important, is the inability to stay sharp. I mean, he just can't get out there. He can't beat balls on the range. His timing, his touch, everything. You know, it's all a sequence, a good, beautiful golf swing. And if you can't practice, you can go out there and shoot a 75, which would be nice for most of us hacks, but you simply can't win at this level. And I don't know how this changes the rest of his life. Without sounding overly dramatic, how will he possibly practice when he doesn't know day-to-day what his back is going to yield?
Well, it's interesting, too. You know, when you have back issues, and I've talked to a number of players about this, The hardest shots on your back are chip shots and putts because of the position that you have to get yourself in. And so the tendency, I think, is going to be for Tiger going forward and not spend as much time on his short game, chipping and putting, because that's going to have the most discomfort for him with the back issues. And so, to me, that is problematic. The other issue is, if you take a look at when Tiger started the comeback a year and a half ago, the first few months that he was out back on the PGA Tour, his swing speed was number two. He was swinging the club 130 miles an hour and hitting the ball a mile. He is now, after a year and a half, all the way down where he's barely above average. I think he's right at average in terms of swing speed. So he really has lost distance. He's lost power over the last year and a half, and he's going to have to play a different kind of a game. When he won, he's won two PGA championships here at Medina. He was basically able to overcome and overpower the golf course. He's not going to be able to play it that way this week.
I like how you lean on the numbers, too, because I've referenced, you know, the ball speed, the swing speed. When he first came back after the fusion, as you documented, I mean, he was crushing the ball. He was hitting it on the screws, and now you could tell that the numbers are dropping. So the science of the math is not misleading. It is what it is. We're talking about golfing here, NBC Sports, Medina, getting ready for the BMW Championship, Tiki and Tierney. All right, the big story here is pace of play, and everybody interprets this differently. Before, I can't really ask you questions until I know where you stand. Was it an overreaction this weekend with Bryce DeChambeau, or was it fair? Let me. Where do you stand on this stuff?
I think it was fair. It's a big problem, and not just at the highest level of the game. It's a problem, you know, throughout all levels of the game, and that's one of the reasons why we're not seeing the game of golf grow the way it should be, because people simply don't have the amount of time that they've had in the past. I hosted an event last night here at Medina with Justin Rose. We did a little fireside chat for about 45 minutes, and he's been pretty vocal about the slow play issue, as you know. And the interesting thing about it is it's not a new problem. It's just come to light primarily because of this PGA Tour Live, this new golf that you're seeing, PGA Tour Live, where basically they only show two groups of players in an entire golf tournament. So when you focus on only two groups, you're going to see everything they do and how long it takes. Normally, the public would not see how slow the play is because the producers of NBC Golf or Golf Channel would never show it. So it's only coming to light now, even though it's been a problem.
Okay, so not only with the live aspect and focusing on the two power groups, but I mean, this is common sense, social media as well. I mean, you know, if one player says one thing that's interpreted as, you know, as a shot at Bryson DeChambeau or somebody else who's historically slow, it's going to gain traction and it's going to be put out there and shoved down our throats. But to my understanding, Jack was pretty slow. I mean, Jack Nicklaus was not quick around the golf course, but guys may have complained about it over a scotch, but there was no outlet, no vehicle to let the whole world know about it, right?
Yeah, I mean, had there been social media back then, I think he would have gotten roasted. I'll tell you, one of the things that I'm starting to sense, and there's been a lot of talk about it around Medina today, is the sponsors are going to start coming down on their players. Now that this has become very public, once the sponsors realize that they're paying a lot of money for a logo on a slow player, and that slow player is never going to get shown on television, they're not going to get their money's worth, not because he isn't a star player, or doesn't have a great personality and all that. It's just he's not going to be shown on television because the TV producers can't take a chance of going to his group not knowing when he's actually going to play the shot. And all of this is now starting to come out really in the last couple weeks. And I think there will be some change because of this. The PGA Tour understands what a problem it is, and already they've announced they're examining their policy. And I think you're going to see some changes in the policy from the tour where they're actually – going to be penalizing players. You can fine players all you want, but when guys are making $20 million a year, a $5,000 fine really doesn't matter.
It's true. No, it really is. And, you know, listen, what DeChambeau did the other day, walked off 71 or 72 yards, I mean, that was ridiculous. But to be fair, and Mark, you know this, there's got to be a balance. I mean, at the local muni, that's one thing. If you're shooting a 97 and you fidget with your grip 13 times and you give 7 practice swings and you warm burn 131 yards, as we all do, That's unacceptable. Utterly unacceptable. But when you are playing for money, when you're playing for your legacy, reinforcing this stuff, it is a little tricky. So the PGA Tour has seemingly been pretty proactive. They changed their calendar, all right, in flip. So yeah, football's here. Let's get the PGA up here. That'll be better sequentially. Is this implemented for the start of the 2020 season, or does this linger on?
I don't know. I think it's going to get solved pretty quickly. What we're going to see
Good.
Is some tremendous peer pressure from the other players. And we saw that about DeChambeau, right? Guys, you know, chiming in and really talking about how bad Bryson is when it comes to pace of play. And already, you know, right after the incident, Bryson doubled down. He tripled down. He said, you know what? I'm going to keep doing this. You know, I'm not slow. I'm faster than these other guys. I get to my ball faster, yada, yada. He has now changed his tune today. And he's basically saying, you're right, I've got to work on this. And it wasn't from pressure on social media, I don't think. It wasn't from pressure, you know, from the media in general or the public. It was the pressure from the other players. When your peers are singling you out as a problem, it's going to have an impact. And I think he's starting to see that. And I'll bet you see him try to pick it up a little bit.
Okay, final thing. We're talking to Mark Rolfing, NBC Sports, Medina. The BMW Championship coming up this weekend. In case you just tuned in, Tiger is going to give it a shot. He's going to play. We'll see how he does. Obviously, it's been a very inconsistent summer since the Masters, which was riveting. But it, just in terms of a characteristic of the course here, long hitter, short hitter, shot maker, putter. I mean, give us a few names that this course really ties into the skill set of. Who do you think is going to win?
It looks exactly like Rory McIlroy to me. And I was thinking about Rory this morning because, of course, the Europeans won that Ryder Cup in 2012 here. I have no idea how they did. But, you know, he woke up late on Sunday morning, almost missed his tee time, had to get an escort to get out here. He had a lot of good karma the last time he played here at Medina. The course is very long. You're going to have to hit the ball a mile. The fairways are pretty wide open. The rough is substantial, but not a huge issue. But the important thing here is these greens are not enormous and they don't have a whole lot of undulation into them. They're a fairly easy set of greens to putt, and that's exactly what Rory McIlroy needs. So when it becomes a pure ball striker's course, he immediately becomes my favorite, and I think that's what Medina is going to be this week.
It's tough to argue. I mean, listen, if you could tee it up and let it rip 340 or 350 and have pretty benign greens, Rory McIlroy is going to be in the 60s quite a few times. I would imagine I'll probably put some money behind that as well. Good job, Mark. Appreciate it. And we'll see what Tiger has, and we'll go from there. Thank you very much, man.
All right. Take care.
Okay. There you go. So Tiger's going to try to give it a shot. We shall see. And, of course, Medina and NBC Sports' live tournament coverage Thursday through Sunday, BMW Championship. And we shall see as we get ready for the end of the golf season and into the football season. Speaking of football, coming up next here, Andrew Luck. You know, I don't want to be too alarmed the first couple of days of practice. All right. But his injury history and now the mixed messages of what the injury actually is. What is going on with the Colts quarterback? We'll do that coming up next right here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. But Jay Berman's update. Okay, Tiki and Tierney brought to you by Fidelity Investments. Phase matter. Fidelity, you'll know what you're paying and why. Visit Fidelity.com/value to invest with zero trade-offs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, NYSFSIPC, here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Good beat there, D-Cell. The old one. Always works, though. Always works. SiriusXM 206 on Twitter at Tiki and Tierney, 1-855-212-4227. A lot of NFL, as you would imagine. A lot of stuff on Dak. We'll get back to that top of the hour. Antonio Brown. And now, Andrew Luck. You know, there's just certain people, and for me, James Dolan's one of them, at least pertaining to a team that I root for. I never want to hear from him. He never says anything that is, at least for me, remotely inspiring, remotely reassuring, remotely believable or whatever. It doesn't do anything for me. So when he makes the radio rounds, and he'll do that once every year or so, I take it with a grain of salt because the Knicks have been pretty much a doormat for 20 years that he's owned them. Now, the Colts is a little different. They haven't been a doormat. There's been a little dysfunction. Their old GM, Gregson, ignored the offensive line. We've talked about this for years here on the show. They took a guard at sixth overall last year. Turned out to be one of the best we've seen in a long time. Changed their whole dynamic. Luck got healthy. Shoulders right. What do you know? They're winning back. They're back to winning games. And then we get to hear from Jim Irsay again, their owner. And I don't know what to make of this here because we're getting a lot of conflicting reports. Listen, I thought it was the calf. I don't know how. I definitely thought it was the calf. And now Irsay chimes in and he says that it's more about the little bones, a little bone issue here. Here's what he said. I really feel very confident that he's going to find his way through this thing. I think after the Durant thing, stop. Soon as you hear that, no. Now you got to flinch a little bit if you're a Colts fan. I think after the Durant thing, everyone's erring on the side of caution. But quite frankly, this is not even in the Achilles tendon. It's in another area. It's a bone, which is nothing that we've heard about. We have not heard anything about the bone. Then he goes on to say, I'm not good at these things, but it's a small little bone. Let's see. The trainers told me he's doing very well, very excited. He's a married man, baby on the way, and he couldn't be more excited for the season. We wish there wasn't any little tweaks at all, but as you know, these things come up, and you've just got to deal with them. This is not a little thing. I mean, how is this a little tiny thing? This would be a little tiny thing if it was the first day of OTA, or even if it was the first day of camp. We are getting ready for the next wave of preseason games. We are getting ready. We're already in another week of training camp. We're moving closer to the start of the NFL regular season. And Andrew Luck's done basically nothing. So very little. Very little. So, you know, if it was somebody else, and I want to be fair to Andrew here, but you just only have to react to the evidence in which, you know, what the athletes give you here. And the evidence for Luck medically, historically, is not very favorable. It's just not. And to be honest with you, what the Colts put out there and what they feed us has also been a little murky. You know, think about that. Remember when we were discussing his shoulder issue and Frank Reich hadn't even seen him throw a pass at one point? Like, wait, that is beyond comprehension. All right, so we don't need to see it, but are you telling me that you haven't seen him throw a football in the bubble on the side field when there's no cameras? I don't know. I don't know what to think about this, except that, you know, I mean, Mike.
Here's a question I have for you.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much you think about this or if it's just a question just to ponder. We know Jacoby Brissett is backing up Luck.
Yep.
We know that Luck has missed a full season and he's had various injuries before. And he stands in the pocket and he gets hit. He's not one of those guys who knows how to, you know, who avoids hits. And he's not a guy who scrambles and slides. He gets hit and he gets hit hard a lot.
He does.
So here's a question.
Okay.
How many games does Andrew Luck have to miss this season, next season, whatever, before, as the Colts, you just say, we know when he's on the field, he's one of the best in the NFL, but we just can't rely on it. It's time for us just to look elsewhere.
No.
I'm not saying this year, but like, at what point do you start thinking about that?
When he retires. That's how good he is.
So no matter how many games he's missing, injuries, this and that, you never cut bait until he's done.
Well, there's got to be a point where the diminished returns contractually, and they're not at this point yet, but it, you know, just to kick it down the road a little bit because you posed the question to me, you know, say if this is serious, and I don't, just say if he misses 5 games, 7 games, whatever, and you know, next year he's kind of healthy, and then the next year he's a little, like, if this merry-go-round keeps going, eventually I've got to go to Andrew Luck and I've got to say, for the betterment of our team, you know, we've got to restructure here. We've got to do. So I would never say Andrew Luck goodbye or we officially cut Andrew. But he was too talented. Now, there's other guys that are less talented. And I'll say somebody like Derek Carr, where it's far more nebulous. You know, you're like, he's flashed. He's had one really good season. If he didn't get hurt, he may have won the MVP. But since then, he's regressed. You know, is he really the guy? You know, the Colts don't have to be definitive because they already had their answer. And you prefaced it in the question. When he's on the field, he's among the two or three best in the game. Undeniably, he is great. So I'm not worried about that, but there does come a point where, you know, you don't get healthier as you get older. You just get more and more beat up. And what did Tiki say last week? He's starting to enter the bad sell guy territory, which is a bad – so Tiki doesn't have many lists. That is the one list you don't want to be on, the bad sell guy list. And he is really trending quickly in that direction. And, you know, I don't even know where this goes. Like, if it was muscular, I think I would feel better, I think. But you talk about, you know, little tiny bones in the hands, little tiny bones in the foot, the ankle. That's a complex joint. There's a lot of little things there that are very hard to pinpoint. I can't sit here and say with even a modicum of confidence that he's playing in week one. I mean, who could possibly say that? You could say it. You could hope it. You could try to speak it into existence. But, I mean, right now, Mike DeSalle, would you bet that he's playing week one? What would you do?
I would say, if I were a betting man, I would say he will not play week one, but he will be in there fairly early in the season.
DeSalle?
I mean, if it's me, I'm really confident he won't be there week one. I'd be shocked if he was.
Yeah. You know, and that's what DeSalle just said is pretty interesting, because the one thing about luck, the less we hear and the more confused we get, generally, that's a bad sign. Because back to the shoulder issue. I mean, it was like this sworn secret, like some old Jedi secret that's passed down only amongst Jedis. Nobody knew what the hell was going on. I mean, how is it possible in a world of information, nobody, including the team that he's on, has even an ounce of information on their franchise quarterback? How is this possible? Like, it's bad enough that on the first day of training camp, here we go. All right, he's got a little calf issue. Let's hold our breath. Hopefully he's all right. Now, but now, you know, camp starts in late July. It's basically the middle of August here. We're moving toward that point. And he's not even really playing. So, you know, I am a firm believer. I am a strong proponent in really, truly reacting to what is in front of you. Really, stop trying to guess. Stop trying to interpret. Stop trying to piece this and that and come up with this. No. Is he out there on the field doing his thing every day? No, the answer is no. So why in the world should anybody express any confidence that he'll do it in week one? DeSalle, I think that you're right. Wow.
I mean, I don't want to be right about that.
No, but me neither.
I don't think Andrew Luck or the Colts training staff or the coach, like, no one gives us that extra bit of confidence to give them the benefit of the doubt to make you think that he will be on the field.
It's true. It's true. There are certain franchises that, you know, there's certain franchises, and this is the obvious stuff, like, you know, who drafts well, who's consistent in terms of the coaching practice. Like, the Steelers have had three coaches. The Patriots have had great consistency with Belichick. Obviously, coordinators have kind of been rotating, but that's because they've earned promotions with other teams. The what's a little, because it's not incredibly interesting to discuss, but there are certain teams whose medical evaluators, or at least in the realm of what I do day to day, are not really that highly respected. Or there's some question. Maybe that's not the right way to frame it. That there's question. Like the Mets, the New York Mets medical history has been one. If you're a Mets fan, you know what I'm saying. I'm not going to get into it, you know, chapter and verse here. But it's been a circus. So anytime they diagnose this, Met fans expect that, the complete opposite. And I feel like we're starting to get there with the Colts, at least pertaining to Andrew Luck. How is this guy not ready? Had all offseason. What's going on? Man, oh, man. It's crazy. All right, Tiki and Tierney coming up third hour. We'll preview the Raiders. We'll get back to Dak, AB, 1-855-212-4227. You think Andrew Luck plays week one? I'm not feeling it right now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.